It's time for She Says Art and He Says Science, your weekly hour of edutainment as you learn about the creative interaction between artists and scientists. With your host, Jill Dittmeyer, curious journalist and arts enthusiast, and Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit. Now it's time for She Says Art and He Says Science.
Hello, I'm Jill Dittmeyer, curious journalist and arts enthusiast.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations.
And we're doing that today. We are doing it via Zoom. We're talking about the art and science of teaching at the university level during COVID-19. And Mark, we have some terrific guests joining us for this conversation. Why don't you introduce them?
Yeah, I'm excited to welcome Diane Timmerman, who's the chair and professor of theater at Butler University, who she's also a professional actor, director, and executive artistic director of Equity Theater. I didn't even know that. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you so much.
Equity Theater.
And we also have a recurring guest, which we always love having, Andy Gavron, who's the department chair of physics, associate professor at IUPUI, and the director of the Bridges to the Baccalaureate in Central Indiana. Wow, that's a mouthful. Hi, Andy.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Glad to have you here, Andy.
And we always love talking to Miss Juliet King, who's associate professor of art therapy at George Washington University, adjunct associate professor of neurology at Indiana University School of Medicine, and now a PhD student in translational health sciences at George Washington University. Welcome, Juliet.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm so glad to see you all and be connected again.
It's great to have all of you.
It is. And obviously we're talking about teaching during the pandemic at the university level, and all three of you are very much involved in that. And some of you were involved when it all kind of first started too. How's it going? Diane, we'll start with you.
It's amazing. It's going fine. Some of our classes at Butler University are all online. Some are a hybrid, partially online, partially in person, and some are completely in person. So we have all of those dynamics going, and I have to say that all things considered, it is going well.
That's really great.
I mean, I could talk for 2 hours about this or longer. So I teach in theater. So obviously so much of that is practical, hands-on, in-person kinds of activities. And so that all has to be modified. And for example, I teach voice for the actor, the Linklater voice technique. And a lot of what I'm teaching this semester in the particular Voice for the Actor 2 class that I'm teaching is very much akin to singing. And singing is a big no-no that we can't do with one another. So what I've been doing is I've been doing as many classes as I can in person, because at least the theater students, they really need it. They want to be with other people. We're theater people. We don't like the online thing that much. So I teach in person and teach some of the foundations of the technique, and then we then move outdoors and we do some of it outdoors, and then I have a follow-up class where we're online, each in our own rooms, and without our masks, finally, and then everybody can give it a try and really cut loose and really send those aerosols to their computer screen and not harm anybody, and we can really test out the techniques full bore when we're not together.
That's really great. You have some real similarities, I know, to Andy for physics. How do you do labs, Andy, online?
So honestly, we've had to make some tough decisions there. our upper level classes are small enough that we're able to accommodate all of those students in lab. Basically what it means is a class that used to have a bunch of students coming in and they would pair up and work on experiments in the lab. Now they each come in on their own like half day of the week and do the experiment alone. And the faculty member is upstairs in his or her office. And, you know, if there's a problem, then the student can go say, oh, you know, Dr. Liu, can you come help me out? And they come down and stay 6 feet apart and work on the apparatus and then wipe everything off. But it's possible to at least give students the face-to-face lab. For our introductory courses, which have hundreds upon hundreds of students, I think we have almost 800 students in our intro level courses this semester, it was just completely impossible. So we have gone to entirely virtual labs. There are a number of different things that we do. Some of them are simulated apparatus where a student manipulates images of the real thing. Some of them are computational labs where students write little programs to do their own simulations of things that happen in the lab. And some of them take other forms. There are some experiments that you can do with the sensors in your cell phone. And I don't think any of those have come up yet, but later in the semester, I know in my class, they're going to be doing a couple of different cell phone-based labs.
And Juliet,
for you.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Joe.
Juliet, for you, you're both teaching and a student, so it's a double whammy for you.
Yeah, it's a double whammy. I would say it's about teaching online is about triple time the work. It really is. And my esteemed colleagues, I think, would agree with me. It's been really challenging. Diane, you say that your theater people and theater people don't really like this Zoom thing. And we're creative arts therapists, right? And so much of our work that and learning experience takes place through experiential learning. Right, making art and understanding how the art making helps to elucidate some of the information that you're learning and helps to really synthesize it. But our therapists learn by doing, and so we try to keep the old creativity hat on, and it actually offers some new opportunities for creative problem solving and being able to, you know, work at home in your own studio while still being together in this online format has proven to be, it works, it's working. It's a lot of effort, but it's working. And I know for the, you know, we're talking about education, but I'll just plug the art therapy program at the Neuroscience Center at the IU School of Medicine, and they've transitioned to entirely online patient care and telehealth. And they're doing a fabulous job, always have a list, you know, a waiting list. And also the pandemic has offered up more opportunities to be able to provide outreach and so support groups for people with traumatic brain injuries and Parkinson's disease and things like that. So patient care hasn't stopped. In fact, I think that there's even more of a need now to support people in their psychological and emotional health.
So I would guess in all of your cases that some of this you were beginning to transition to do not like we are now, but what I mean is pieces of this. And I know for sure, Andy, I know you were exploring ways that virtual labs could actually enhance the regular teaching.
Absolutely. There had been some publications on the value of virtual labs, and we were picking up on some of that. And also computational methods are very important. And the lab was a great opportunity to give students some experience with learning basic computational methods.
Juliet, for you as a student, though, you're studying, you know, for a pretty important degree. And are you doing it all virtually, or have some of your classes resumed in person as well?
Yeah, I realized I didn't answer that part of your question. I think maybe I'm blocking out the fact that I'm a doctoral student. And that too is not proving to be an easy effort. But so our program, the PhD in Translational Health Sciences program, has always been a hybrid model. And so part of it's been online, and then we have twice a semester during the fall, summer, and spring, we have immersion weekends. So we have these intensive immersion weekends peppered throughout the year. And so those immersion weekends have been all online too. And I know for my cohort and I, that's been a bit of a challenge because, I mean, we're humans and we're conditioned for connection, not for isolation. And so we learn so much just from being together, and not only the time in class, but the debriefing time outside. And that's really taking a toll. So sure, we can plug through various models and frameworks online, just as my students can. But the real magic, I think, and beauty of learning how to be a therapist and even learning how to be a scientist is the connections that we make in the process. And so I will say that that's a con. We were prepped, GW's art therapy program was prepped to be a hybrid online program for the fall. And then GW made the executive decision, probably I think it was a week or two before the fall semester started. And they said, nope, we're all online, which I think makes sense for safety. I appreciate that. And I think actually being all online is a little easier than hybrid. And Andy could probably speak to that because it does get a little confusing with the number of students that are allowed to be in the class. And then the number of students that you have to offer opportunities for in class, in person, and at home. And so when you're working with large numbers, especially, that can be quite a challenge. So I appreciate the consistency of all online. And hopefully I'll be able to see my cohort, my student buddies back in the springtime. You know, hopefully things will be shifting, but I know for now it is what it is.
Diane, the students at Butler, they kind of cracked down on them when they brought the students back and things got a little out of hand with the COVID numbers and some kind of serious rules were made. How is that going? Explain that a little bit to our listeners if they're not familiar with it.
Yeah, so much to all of our surprise, including faculty, we didn't know either until the Sunday before we were to start the school year on a Monday. We all got an email saying, guess what? We're online for at least 2 weeks. The COVID numbers had just spiked. The students were gathering in close proximity without masks. And so they shut us down. And we were all shocked. I mean, we're setting up Zoom links here, you know, and just spending that day Sunday just emailing all the students and prepping everybody and reorienting ourselves. I mean, luckily we had faced this in the spring, so it wasn't a complete shock to the system, but we had no idea it was going to happen. But everybody did settle down. They just, you know, keep doing the testing and our rate is very, very low right now. So it worked. It certainly got everybody's attention. Certainly all the students in the arts college were like, you know, cracking down on their fellow students across campus because they really wanted to get back into the classroom and to the rehearsal hall and everything. So we're back, and I think I feel positive about it. I think we'll make it through the semester and indeed the school year. I think we won't get shut down again, but you know, I guess nobody can predict that.
Yeah, and I think for all of you, isn't it the on and off sometimes that's the difficult part? Because we're all navigating this and it's still not known whether we're going to be, just like you said, Diane, have to be all online. Juliet, you were saying you are all online. My courses are all online, and there is some ease to that. But I got to tell you that I feel for all of you. I can't imagine, you know, I think a lot of administrators may be learning now finally, but it is a ton of work to be able to move online everything.
I'm going to say it's brutal.
We'll go along with brutal.
Brutal is a word. Yeah. Yeah. And then the wear and tear of the lack of movement and the blue light and just the, you know, teaching. People think that, oh, you're a professor, you're a teacher. Yes, and there's so much more, as you all know, that goes into being a professor, right? And all the other different obligations that you have, oftentimes which are solitary acts of writing or research or paperwork, administration, committee work, things like that. So some days it's all day online, Zoom. You know, and I recognize my privilege here. I'd much rather be in the position that I'm in and have a job. And so I try to remind myself that I am very fortunate, and at the same time allow myself some space, because it's brutal and it can be grueling. And all day online does something different to us, I think, than and to our brains. And so our response, I think our stress response systems, already heightened with pandemic, are also kind of engaged in a little bit more of a challenge or a little bit more taxing because of this computer time.
Do you find, Andy, that the lack of, a lot of this is new technologies, all layered on together. They weren't new maybe independently, although Zoom has really kind of come on differently. But do you find that the lack of integration with a lot of them is a problem, and it takes a lot of time?
That is a problem. Basically, a lot of faculty are inventing their own ways of integrating these various technologies, and of integrating the technologies with the rest of their lives. I mean, I was just thinking as Julia was saying that, normally at the end of class, a bunch of students would come up afterwards and, they'd have a quick question or, you'd have a little back and forth. And what was once a 2-minute, just quick conversation in the corridor while walking between buildings has become an exchange of 10 emails. Mm-hmm. I just took a moment check. I archive all my emails. We're now into the fifth week of the semester only. I've received 960 emails from
my gosh,
so far this semester.
Well, I guess it's good that they're communicating.
That compares to what in a normal year?
A comparable number.
Yeah.
Because I respond to all of them. So, I mean, just imagine what sending and receiving almost 1,000 emails in 5 weeks means in terms of time and in terms of wear and tear. I have a colleague who's developing a serious carpal tunnel problem that, wasn't a normal part of teaching.
Absolutely, you can definitely see how that could happen. And for the students though, do you feel like you're answering their questions like you want to, Andy? It is as similar as it can be to that 2-minute in-person thing with the emails or not?
In the end it is. And actually, here I'd like to mention an upside. Students, particularly the introductory level, are very hesitant to come to faculty office hours. It's kind of, they're intimidated. I try not to be an intimidating person, but it is tough. And their schedules are difficult, et cetera. I've had way more one-on-one Zooms with students this semester than I would normally ever have conversations in my office with students.
Are you
coming around?
Yeah. Juliet, are you able to use the very thing that you teach to help students manage themselves? In other words, can you use art therapy with your students who are already stressed that are in art therapy?
So are you asking, would I engage students in art therapy as they're learning art therapy?
Yes.
Well, I would certainly suggest that students seek therapy or seek art therapy But that wouldn't be specific to just art therapy students. Because of the boundaries and the roles of being a teacher and being a therapist, they're quite different, although we do operate on a parallel process. And so the exchange that happens with the student, you can imagine teacher to student, is a similar kind of exchange that happens with therapist to client, but the goals are different. And so that's really an important part of the learning too. It's all relational. And I will say, I know we're talking about some of the great challenges, but something that has been really beautiful, I think, for me is it has been very reaffirming that my students are the reason why I teach, period. And so that really has been very, I think that's highlighted, and I'm reminded of that every year when school starts. Because, you know, when you do a lot of outside work for your job, and you spend, you know, I teach on a 3-3 load, and that's a pretty heavy teaching load for wanting to do research and also participate in service and whatnot. But undoubtedly, although it's very taxing, my students are really cool and they're really invested and they care a lot and they're very bright. And so that's been exciting and really affirming. And this whole concept of, you know, Irvin Yalom is a psychotherapist, and he's quite profound and prolific, but he talks about a concept called universality as it relates to group process. And basically what that is about is this we're all in this together mentality. And when you're in a group with other people that are dealing with similar issues, then the energy and the bonds that you create with one another, they help you work it through. And so I think that concept is very much resonating now, and really kind of in some ways leveling the hierarchy between teacher and student. So although the boundaries and the roles are defined pretty clearly, we're all in this pandemic together and nobody has the answers. All the answers. And, you know, I teach one of the classes I teach is trauma. And so we're looking at all of the traumatic responses, or many of the responses that we're all having, not just to the pandemic, but to what I'm hopefully calling the civil rights movement, and addressing some of the ongoing racism that we've been dealing with in our country. And so this, we're all in this together kind of bond, I think, is really helping move things forward.
Diane, I would think with the theater students too, it's kind of that weird way. In a way, this is like a whole theater production in essence for them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole trying set of given circumstances that we're all trying to operate within. So just like as one analyzes a play and a character and tries to figure out the parameters, and then how am I going to operate within those parameters, which is what, you know, basically acting is. Yeah, it is. It's all a big acting game, I guess you could say, in a way. It's true. And the dynamic that Juliet just mentioned is very interesting. And I'm going to look that up. I think that is so true. And I guess the thing that I would add to that is, especially for theater people, that kind of getting the energy and the sustenance from the whole group, mm-hmm. like we really need that to be in person.
Yeah.
So for us, it's more like that concept of drafting with bike racers. You know, you got to be right in there with your pack, and then you can just flow and do anything. And so I do feel this bond with all of us at this time, even electronically. But that really touches me, because I think that especially for theater people, that bond is especially meaningful and deep and helpful to us as humans and as artists if we're in person together.
I think that you hit on all of you, but particularly on that point, Diane, that all good teachers, really good teachers, are good actors. And they have to read their audience, which are students. And that not being in person is very, very difficult. And that's why we get so tired, would be my guess. But I think all teachers who do really, really good job of engaging with their students are doing what actors do all the time. And so I think that's what's wearing on us.
That's really well, but I just got to jump in there and say that all of us who are actors and teachers know that both professions are quite similar, for sure.
That's Diane Timmerman. She, Juliet King, and Andy Gavran are our guests this hour. We are talking about teaching at the university level during COVID-19. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more of our conversation. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Toni Morris. Join me for an hour of some of the best music for guitar on Classical Guitar Alive. Each week we explore a wide variety of music with guitar, and you'll also hear interviews with many of the world's foremost performers and composers. That's each week on Classical Guitar Alive.
Saturday mornings at 5 on WICR, The Diamond.
Rock and roll has evolved over the years from a sound that shaped the youth of a nation.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, a crying old time.
To an era that started a rebellion.
We're the rebel, yeah. She's my mom,
Or even bringing in a brand new generation. Every week on After Dark, we look through the songs and the stories that shaped rock and roll as we know it today.
After Dark, Sundays at 1 a.m. on 88.7 WICR.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
No alarm clock. No traffic to negotiate. No staff meetings to attend. Sunday is your day, so do yourself a favor, tune out all that noise, and tune in for Sunday Baroque.
Sunday morning from 5 to 9 here on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling. And today we're talking about the art and science of teaching at the university level with Diane Timmerman and Andy Gavran and Juliet King. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I you know, Juliet, you got me thinking. Part of what your degree and work is in is with neuroscience. And do we know what happens when people get stressed and what can be things that can happen to the brain?
Yes, absolutely. I'll make a very complicated system. I'll try to make it real generalized. I think a good way to think about stress, and stress is a form of trauma, right? And so there's all different levels. There's all different ways that we experience stress, acute, chronic, complex, right? So there's all different forms. And a really interesting thing about stress and trauma is that it comes upon us. We don't bring trauma on, right? Trauma is something that happens to us. Now, stress is a little different, but stress situations often accompany traumatic situations. And even though everybody's experience is individualized and highly subjective, for example, we might have the same experience we might have the same experience of trauma, but based on who we are, our genes, our biology, the way we grew up, the people around us, we might respond differently to that. However, overall, there really is a generalized way that we can understand stress as the body responds to it. And ultimately what we're talking about is a disruption of homeostasis. And so what happens in our neurotransmitters and our hormones and our heart rates, in our sympathetic and our parasympathetic nervous system. And you can imagine that the nervous system functions with the sympathetic nervous system is like an accelerator, you know, and these are evolutionary responses. This is the way, you know, that we've been born, bred, and evolved to respond to trauma. And basically we have one system that activates us and gets us prepared for fight, flight, freeze, or collapse. And then we have another system, the parasympathetic, that helps us calm down. And so you can imagine that as like an accelerator and a brake, right? And so accelerator, you take a deep breath, hold it, and slowly let it out. Some of the breathing that we do in yoga, that's an easy way to remember the connection between the increase and the decrease of the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. So what ends up happening is when our systems are continuously stressed is that we experience behavioral responses to that. And those behavioral responses can look like depression, they can look like anxiety, they can look like overwhelming dreams. You know, a lot of writing is out there these days about how people are experiencing strange dreams during the pandemic. And so we have to consider our conscious and unconscious systems are really at play right now, trying to make sense of what it is that's happening. So in our students, you know, I've heard, and I like to check in with my students often and find out from them what's working and what's not. And consistently, they're having a hard time. They're experiencing a lot of fear. They're experiencing a lot of anxiety. And so what it is that we try to do is help them understand, again, together, help understand how some of the ways that we're experiencing the world are certainly are normal. There are normal, healthy bodily responses to the way that we're experiencing the world. And they do have a biological basis. And when you put the science underneath and behind what our experiences are, we often can see ourselves a little bit more objectively and understand our own perspectives a little bit easier.
So Diane, it leads me to my understanding of theater, that anxiety and stress is something that actors face before they go on stage, or even sometimes during a performance. You do a lot of things in training actors, don't you, to help reduce that anxiety and stress up front?
Yeah, so of course ours are the most effective, just like Juliet said, are those that are based in breathing. So breath, slowing down the breathing, deep breathing, can really be helpful to nerves. The other thing that can be helpful is just an incredible preparation. So sometimes stage fright just takes over, and there are all sorts of reasons for that that Juliet could describe way better than me and knows all about that. But I know for a fact that it can just take over a person regardless of preparation, regardless of years of experience and all that good stuff. But I do share with my students that a completely solid preparation makes an actor feel more confident and prepared for when those actor thoughts come in, or when the vase falls and breaks and it wasn't supposed to, or all the things that happen during a play that takes out of the play. And I guess to relate it to the pandemic is that preparation piece, we're doing the best we can, but we don't really know. Is this going to be another 3 months? Is it going to be another 3 years? Is something else going to happen after this? We're preparing as best we can, but we can't have everything under control. Imagine that's one of the things that is leading to collective stress amongst us.
Yeah, Andy, do you feel like that you are spending more time with your students trying to help them relieve their stress, or teaching them what you're trying to teach them?
So, you know, I think the two things really overlap a tremendous amount. You know, I teach a subject, physics, which almost nobody takes because they wanted to. It's a degree requirement for the entire School of Engineering, degree requirement for math and computer science and chemistry majors. And most of my students are stressed out even in a normal semester, just for having to be there. So a lot of what I do has to do, first of all, with establishing trust. You both Juliet and Diane were talking earlier about the relationships, and establishing a relationship of trust with 150 students simultaneously, either on Zoom or in a lecture hall, is part of the challenge of what I do. And it's something that I've tried to practice over the years. Then the other piece that again comes back to what Juliet and Diane were just talking about is dealing with that stress. And in this case, it's the testing situation. Students are going to walk into a room, they're going to have 50 minutes or 75 minutes to answer questions that they've never seen before using techniques that are very rigidly applied, maybe rigidly isn't quite the right word, but objectively applied. You can't just decide to use one of Newton's laws for something else that it doesn't apply to. The parameters are quite rigorous. So preparing them for that stress has a lot to do with having them be deeply prepared and convincing them that, yeah, the goal isn't to be able to do the problem kind of as long as you could look at a reference book and take your time. The goal is to be able to do it under stress, in a hurry, and someday they may be working on a deadline in a big engineering firm on a project that is going to affect human safety or human health. And they can't just say, well, you know, I can't do this in a rush. I need to go look stuff up. You're working with a team, the project's due in a week, and you've got to get it done.
That makes me wonder too, exactly, that how much all of you have had to change your lesson plans then to accommodate some of the students that maybe are facing more stresses. Whereas Andy, it seems like you said, your students are already, that's kind of part of what's going to happen when they take their course kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, for us, especially in the spring, I'm currently the chair of theater at Butler. And so to all of the faculty and staff, my mantra throughout the spring was err on the side of generosity. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to teach everything that you thought you were going to be able to teach this semester. It's just not going to happen. So focus on what you can do and let the rest go. And so I'm in theater, and so we are a little more loose than a physics program. There is more wiggle room, and so we took advantage of that because the students, especially in the spring, the students were completely stressed out.
And I don't want to minimize the fact that my students have additional stresses, new stresses that they didn't have before. Probably one of the most serious is a lot of students now, they're taking the class on Zoom and they're taking it from their kitchen and their kids are there, or their siblings are there, their parents are there. They don't have a quiet place to go. They don't have a place that they can spread out and focus. And so there are new stresses layered on.
I just wanted to add to that again from an evolutionary perspective and thinking about the way that our brains and bodies work. We quickly kick into a survival brain when we are under a lot of stress, and that does significantly compromise our frontal lobe functions. It makes it harder to think, it makes it harder to focus, it makes it harder to put thoughts together in a cohesive way. And so I think that that's really important for educators to understand that we literally have a harder time taking tests when we're under stress. But it really depends on the amount of stress. A little stress can be really good, and Diane can speak to this, right? But there's a big difference between a little stress that motivates you and gets you on the stage versus a lot of stress which puts you in a freeze mode, right? And so this is all brain science. It's really quite fascinating. So I think there's somewhere in between, but that the trust that Andy was mentioning and that we're all kind of saying is really important, is all relational, and really understanding what our goals are with the people that we're working with and how to best move them forward is where it's at. Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I wanted to ask all three of you as well, because you all are involved in teaching science and the arts, the communication, the connection with people. Have you felt that there has been less or more respect for science and scientists and the appreciation of the arts and the need for theater departments and that kind of thing because of COVID or not? What's your reaction been? Because it seems like it's been kind of mixed overall nationally.
I'm sorry.
It's a big question.
and I don't really know the answer. I mean, I know, I think the answer is sadly, and I'm speculating a bit here, but I think like many things in our society, it's quite bimodal now. I think a lot of people have reacted to COVID by paying more attention to science and deepening their appreciation of the arts, and there are others who have retreated from both.
Ladies, you want to comment?
Yeah, so I think, I'm not sure what society at large is thinking. I know that we all see our friends' posts, and my friends are all in the business, and so their saying has been, where do we all turn? We all turn to Netflix. And, you know, how do you think all those things happen? Those, you know, we are essential workers, all of us designers and actors and directors and storytellers. And so I think in some ways the general public maybe appreciates artists a bit more. I think the real appreciation isn't going to come until we're able to get back together. And I think that getting back together is going to be incredible. And I think that I think people will really feel the vibrations from each other. They will feel each other's presence. They will hear the stories live. And I think it will be an incredible renaissance for live performance.
Wow, that's great. Hopeful.
That is great.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing to say.
It is. And on that nice little note, we're gonna take another short little break here and come back with our conversation with Diane Timmerman, Juliet King, and Andy Gavron. And we do want to remind you that this program is made possible by the generosity of an anonymous donor who supports the Da Vinci Pursuit's mission of creating a museum without walls so that artists, scientists, and you, the community, can all come together for unique activities and conversations. And we're going to continue ours right after this.
Join us for the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock. Host Michael Toulouse brings you his fine commentary as we showcase faculty and visiting artists performing exceptional concerts and recitals from the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. That's the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on 88.7 WICR.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope, furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Dave Baghdad, host of The Kitchen Party Kaylee. I hope you'll join me every Sunday at 10 p.m. for the best music from Ireland, Scotland, Canada, and the U.S. The Kitchen Party Kaylee, Celtic music from across the globe and across town.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
Welcome back. We're talking with Andy Gavarin, Juliet King, and Diane Timmerman about teaching in the university level, but specifically at the idea of thinking about during this time with COVID. And, you know, we've been talking about the effects on students of stress and all those. How do you as faculty members deal with your own stress?
I've been working out more. I need it. I really do.
I would love to say I've been working out more. Yeah. I certainly do practice what I preach in terms of making art. And so really getting involved in the creative process. I think on a more hopeful note that Diane just left us with, I do think that this time does offer opportunities to explore some of these existential questions. And although there are a lot of, time becomes a new question, you know, time feel in physics, maybe Andy can weigh in on this, but time is like time, but it's a metaphor and it's faster and it's slower. Everything, and you know, it all kinds of like plinko down to this existential kind of like rumbling of what is happening, what's going on, what is my place, what does this mean, how can I help? Let me get outside, you know, all of those, but I think that some parts of this do lend itself more to introspection, which can be a frightening thing. And so the art really does help with that.
Mm-hmm. Diane?
Well, I mean, I wish I was working out more because I really would like to do that. And I'm sure I will. I will say that what Juliet just said about that there's something about the time right now that is calling for introspection, and with Black Lives Matter and the pandemic both coming together specifically for arts organizations, something was starting to shift already. But now things are shifting. And I teach this class for first year students at Butler, theater students. And usually we go all over Indianapolis and meet with all sorts of different theater artists and theater associated folks. So of course we're Zooming them all in. We're in the room together, Zooming in our guests. And just talking with them and talking with my students, things are going to change. I think it's going to get more difficult before it gets better, but lots of things are changing, I think, for the better in this world. And so on a personal level, I've been having the space to think about what am I really doing here, and am I being the most effective me I can be? And should I make some changes in my life? And I actually think I will. And like, how can I serve these new / old movements like Black Lives Matter? You know, what can I do to really do something for real? And so I think the pandemic has given me the space to self-reflect more than I would have done, for sure.
Diane, obviously, in addition to teaching, you are the artistic director for the Indy Shakes, the Indianapolis Shakespeare Company, and you guys had to kind of put your whole season on hold as well, too. As you look forward, do you see things changing as to how you're going to be able to present your theater? And the same with the students at Butler. I know they had a full season of theater that was supposed to be presented as well.
Well, I'll start with Butler first, because that's a little bit easier. Because we're an educational institution, our goals are the educational and artistic development of our students. And so we are producing theater. So we are producing with masks and social distancing for the actors, the backstage crew, the stage management. The audiences will be quite limited, mostly live streamed. So we will have our two usual main stage productions this fall that will be presented under these conditions. What's different for us with an equity theater is, first of all, an equity theater, you know, most professional theaters don't want to go with masks on, don't want to have the social, they want to do real theater without those constraints. Plus, they need to sell tickets, or that the money just doesn't work. They can't pay the staff. So we're able to produce for a small audience and with the constraints of social distancing and masks. So that's working out for us. I mean, it's different, but at least our students get to move forward with their progress. As for the Indianapolis Shakespeare Company, yeah, we did, of course, have to move all online. I'm so hopeful that next summer, with the opening of the beautiful Taggart Memorial Main Stage Amphitheater, our $10 million theater that is a world-class theater in Riverside Park, I'm quite hopeful that we'll be able to produce there. Look, even if we're still under some constraints, it is outdoors, and surely we'll be under less constraint than we are now. But so I feel almost positive that we'll be able to produce. We may not be able to have as large of a crowd as we would want, but I'm pretty sure with the outdoor thing, we will be able to produce.
Juliet, a lot of our listeners remember that you've been our art therapy neuroscience expert, and you were traveling all over literally the world to all these, you know, meetings, learning all of the newest things. I'm sure, obviously, those have all been ground to a halt, or have they been happening virtually?
No, actually, the Educational Neuroscience Symposium at Butler was the first symposium that I had the pleasure of being involved in since the pandemic started. I think I had like 5 engagements where I was planning on traveling and going to conferences and things like that and giving presentations, but they all got rescheduled for next year, kind of same time, same place, but next year. Although this fall, things seem to be opening up a little bit in terms of the conferences that are going to be happening online. I know the American Art Therapy Association is going all online for our conference that'll take place in a couple of weeks. I'm part of the Sigma Chi conference here in Alexandria and DC area, and that's a scientific society conference that's really focusing on arts and neuroscience. That's probably something you might be interested in with Da Vinci, kind of similar mission there. But hopefully we'll be back in action for the Mobile Brain Body Imaging Conference next June, I guess that is. Some more exciting things on the horizon.
For you, Andy, have you been taking part in virtual meetings and such, or have yours kind of been canceled?
Yeah, no, but we've had a lot of events shifted online. Really started last April, the American Physical Society meeting, the so-called April meeting, moved online. I had several conferences over the summer that were held online. Not all. I would say maybe a third of the meetings that I would typically have gone to were just flat out canceled, and two-thirds were shifted to some sort of new format, and we're thinking about what's going to happen next year. I would say the online formats have been good, but not great. They're a substitute, but they're not a complete substitute for the real thing. Physicists like to get together. They like to meet each other. There are conferences that I go to that I look forward to in the sense that these are my friends and colleagues who I see once a year or twice a year, and I can look forward to meeting up with them as I have for a decade or more. And meeting them on Zoom, the sessions are okay, but you can't go out for a beer afterwards. You can't have those hallway conversations. You can't do all of the social things that are normally wrapped around the conference.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before, but the three things that lead to, and Juliet knows this, but the three things that lead to health and well-being are the medical part of you, but also the social and the emotional. And we've talked a little bit about emotional and how we're able to handle that through some stress reduction, exercise, and other things. But, you know, in this whole pandemic, I think our government and other places have really missed that we need the social in some way. And it just doesn't cut it doing it only online. And so I don't know what the answer to that is. But if we don't address that issue, then health and well-being for people in general won't be there.
We're starting to wind down our conversation here, but kind of another big question for all of you guys. Has dealing with all this made you want to leave teaching or stay with it?
Not at all. I'm absolutely committed to it. It's, in a way, it's been an interesting challenge. It's been an opportunity to try some new things.
I think for me, it reaffirms the importance of teaching and the meaning that goes along with connecting with people and helping them learn something that's really, really important. Art therapy is a very meaningful profession and it helps a lot of people. And so this experience has reaffirmed, it's good to be in a place where I can connect with people and be supportive. Yeah,
I mean, it's reaffirmed for me too that I want to teach and that I miss it. And I know what you're asking because I actually know a couple of older faculty members who saw the writing on the wall this summer and said, I think we might have to go back online again. And so I'm going to go ahead and retire now because I had to live through that this spring and I hated it. And I just don't want to do it. But for me, I'm not quite that old. And it's reaffirmed for me. I really want to do this and I miss it. And I mean, I'm still teaching, of course, and I'm teaching mostly in person, but it's still not the same. And I can't wait to get back.
That's great.
Well, we want to thank all three of you for sharing your personal thoughts, your professional thoughts with all of us. A big thank you to Diane Timmerman, Chair and Professor of Theater at Butler University, Andy Gavron, the Department Chair of Physics Associate Professor at IUPUI as well, and Juliet King, Associate Professor of Art Therapy at the George Washington University. And remember, Mark, if people want to learn more about our guests and see some of the things that they've done, there's a way that they can do that, isn't there?
They can. You can find pictures of projects and things that people have been talking about, as well as other guests on our website and past shows at thedaVinciPursuit.com, where we create museums without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can come together to enjoy unique activities and conversations.
And until next time, I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you
to stay curious.
Thank you for listening to She Says Art and He Says Science. You can listen to the full show podcast on WICRonline.org as well as on thedaVinciPursuit.com. Or you can join your hosts Jill Dittmeyer and Mark Kiesling here every Saturday at 1 p.m. on a different kind of public radio, 88.7 WICR.